Hello, dear listener. In this episode, Tank may sound like he's coming in over a less than stellar Skype connection. That's because he is. He may have forgotten to hit record. We'll leave you to discover the delicious juxtaposition of that fact and our main topic on your own later. And now, onto the show. Okay, I have a question for everybody.
Hopefully, hopefully.
I am looking at my desk and I have two keyboards here. And if I look down at the floor next to me, there's another keyboard down there.
You mean like this keyboard and this keyboard?
Oh my heavens. Okay. Okay.
Those exact ones.
So, Craig, you're pretty much exempt from answering this question now. But what keyboard do you guys use?
You mean like this keyboard and this keyboard?
No, I don't mean like a musical on-screen iPad keyboard. So.
Wait, let me bring up GarageBand. I can get another keyboard.
I'm so happy you said GarageBand.
Yeah, I don't say GarageBand. Garage is like you're just not spacing out the words enough.
I say GarageBand too, but it's only to be pretentious.
When I'm using my GarageBand, I like to use the surface that looks like aluminium.
You know that's how they spell it, right?
Aluminum.
There's it's like aluminum. An extra.
It's not aluminum unless you're missing letters.
Right. We spell it differently. It's the same as donut. You say donut, we say donut, but it's spelled differently.
No, I think most Australians these days spell donut the American way.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm thinking of English people.
Technically, it should be the other way, but yeah.
People who still have.
I mean, they're basically the same.
Hey, David,
right?
What was your question? Now, this tech reformation has become Helvetic. It's just rabbit trail after rabbit trail.
Well, it's true. And after last week, we were half the lightest form of flogging, too.
that's technically true. If you want to be all the lightest form of flogging, you can bring Jim.
It'd be really funny to have him in here for an episode because he doesn't use any tech. But he does edit the lightest form of flogging. I still can't figure out how he does that on his typewriter. Speaking of typewriters, my question is about keyboards. Because I'm switching back and forth between Windows and Mac a lot, I am switching keyboards a lot. And I'm not happy with my current solution, which is to switch a lot. So, what keyboards do you guys use?
Why am I exempt?
Because you have two keyboards on your desk. You can't be happy with either of them.
No. I use one for my PC work laptop and one for my Mac.
Oh, you have two computers, though.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
Why do you switch a lot?
Why do I switch a lot?
For Windows and Mac?
The command option, jazz. Mm.
Gotcha.
Control.
Yeah, see, I just learned to do that the right way by doing it for a long time because my Mac keyboard doesn't have the numpad. And so when I was doing web design stuff, I just got sick of not having a numpad and being able to type in pixel dimensions and whatever.
Yeah.
So I used the Logitech keyboard for that reason and just got used to the fact that the Windows key is Control C instead of Control key. So that's like pre-programmed. Now when I switch back to using my PC, I'm like Windows C, Windows V. Oh, and nothing's happening. And I have to force myself to go back to Control. Does that answer your question?
Not in a way that makes me happy, but yes.
Yeah. I use a DOS mechanical keyboard at my desk.
DOS as in DAS, right?
DAS, yeah.
How do you like that?
And it's got a 10 key. I really like it. It's really cool. Actually, a coworker of mine bought it on eBay, sort of not on purpose. He was like, oh, someone's going to outbid me on this. This price is too low. And then he got it. He was like, I don't need another keyboard. So I got it for the low price that he got it for. So yeah, this is not the first time this has happened. Wasn't me.
Is it wireless?
Yeah. So no, it's wired.
Okay.
It's wired. In fact, it takes two USB ports. And I think it's because it's got a little like a side USB. You can plug in two USB things on
this
the side.
The
I don't know
thing
why.
I can think of.
But it's great. It's as far as my feel of it. I love the mechanical keyboards. I think they're far and away better than like the.
What does a mechanical keyboard do for you? Like, why? How is it mechanical? Does it move across the desk to the right position and then raise itself up so it's on the right angle?
Yeah, it crawls over to where you want it, and then it goes then you just start typing on it. It's the feel of it. It's the actual positive feel of the keys. It's like the dead opposite of my MacBook, my 2016 MacBook. It actually has a lot of feel. And so that feel is what I like. And I think I could actually, you could probably, if you weren't using the USB ports on the side of it, I think you can just only plug in one of the cables. Because it's a one cable, it splits at the end.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now.
It's not like there's two just long dangly cables sticking off the thing.
Is yours the one with the little dial on the right hand side?
It's the same brand, but it doesn't have that dial. It's a little older.
Okay. We'll put a link.
But it's the exact same brand. Yeah, that's the same one. Yeah, no, it's really nice. It's got an excellent feel. It's got the whatever the really expensive, the actual mechanical piece of that is like the cherry or whatever. Anyway, yeah. It has those really nice ones. And then the other thing I did to it too, though, is I actually pulled every key off the keyboard and put a little rubber bumper underneath each key because it was incredibly loud to type with. And I put these rubber bumpers on. You still have a very similar feel, and it's louder than a standard like a Mac keyboard or something. But it's not louder. Actually, I don't think it's louder than my laptop keyboard. The laptop keyboard is pretty loud.
Oh, you have the 2017 or 2016?
2016, yeah.
MacBook Pro. Yeah, those are so loud.
They're loud. Plus, they have a high failure rate, so it's kind of a win-win.
Yep. Fail and fail loudly. That's actually a programming methodology. Tank, what are you using?
I use a Rosewill, I believe. Rosewill mechanical keyboard.
Oh.
And it's got the loudest clickiness. I think they're blue switches. I don't know. They have them all color coded. I think the blues are the loudest clickiness.
Yeah. I think mine are like the browns or something. I'm not sure.
My wife, Michelle, she kept, she would say like one of her standards in buying a laptop was she wanted to like how the keyboard feels and she likes clicky. Mm. So instead of worrying about that, I just got her an extremely clicky laptop keyboard. That was fairly reasonable priced. It was like $70. It was in the cheaper range of those.
Mm. Yeah. Mine was $40 because of an eBay deal.
That's a great deal.
I will look and see. I don't know.
I might look. That Rosewill, that's not wireless though, right?
Yeah, it wasn't wireless either. That was a bummer.
My problem is that what I would like is something that has decent quality, like a Mac keyboard or a mechanical keyboard, and something that has a numeric keypad and is wireless.
Why do you need it to be wireless?
I just like the idea of being like, sometimes I want to draw on my iPad or whatever, and just being able to like move my keyboard around freely is really nice. But I do have the Amazon Basics wired keyboard, which actually has decent feel. It was like a $9 keyboard. Or not wireless, but it's a wired keyboard. It has a decent feel, and it was like $9.
Yeah, I think for most of the, I don't know of anyone that does the real clicky ones that do wireless. I think it's probably because I'm not sure. Honestly, I'm not sure why. But it's tough to find wireless and a real nice mechanical feel keyboard.
There are a lot of mechanical wireless keyboards, but almost none of them have the numpad, because that's the other thing that I need is a numpad for some of the work that I do. All right. Well, that was depressing. I think it's time to get into our main topic. Tank, you have a topic for us.
So this week, let's talk about how to make a podcast. Is that for an intro?
That is good. I like that.
Okay, very simple.
I say we roll with it.
So Tank, what do you want to talk about starting a podcast? What do you want to know? We're all experts here. We've done it before, once or twice or nine times in David's case.
Oh my heavens.
Yeah, so we've all started podcasts.
Okay,
so I was wondering, actually, David, how many have you started?
He didn't start this one, actually. So
that's true.
Maybe only eight.
I have started three.
I was going to say the best advice for starting a podcast is meet David McCookie, because sooner or later he will start a podcast with you.
That will happen for you.
What's that?
For Joe.
Someday.
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 Not quite yet. Nice. But how many? So you've been a part of three, David?
I have started three and been a part of four. Yeah. Yeah, I need to stop. But I'm actually working on a fifth, so.
Can we get a sneak peek?
The fifth is going to be people, starting with me, but hopefully more than just me eventually, reading old Puritan and Reformed books. So like audiobooks in podcast form. And then when a book is done, it'll be released as an audiobook.
So kind of like Calvinist Batman reads systematic theology.
Yeah, I had the idea before I heard he was doing that, but I should talk to him about it.
I think the better way to do that would be if they read it, but they just read it to themselves. And then you kind of hear them go, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was my favorite thing to do in youth group.
Break out in praise.
That was my favorite thing to do in youth group when the youth pastor is like, okay, could somebody read, Genesis 1, 1 through 5? I will. Oh, did you mean out loud?
That's a good passage.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Since we all have been a part of or helped start some, and maybe some of our listeners who listen to podcasts regularly might be interested in starting one, I thought it'd be a fun episode to talk about our experiences and give some tips for anybody who was interested. So yeah.
Yeah.
So first thing I was wondering, or first thing I thought it'd be good to talk about was why would anyone want to start a podcast in the first place?
That's a good question.
I just kind of got roped into it. Ben one day was like, hey, do you want to be a part of a podcast? And I said, I'll think about it. And then he said, hey, you want to Skype? And then I was a part of a Skype planning call of starting a podcast. I was like, well, guess I'm in.
Did you not realize that's what that was?
I wasn't actually expecting two other people to be on that call.
Oh, sorry, Tank. I didn't know that.
Nah, it was kind of fun. Silly. He had already given me plenty of heads up. I was pretty committed already. But
so that's the trick though, right? If you're going to start, is you bamboozle people.
I must admit, after after being on this one for quite a few years, I'm actually working on another one at the moment, which I'm not going to disclose the subject matter of, but it's with Calvinist Batman. So if people have heard his podcast, they may be at least somewhat familiar with stuff, his voice, my voice together talking about things, but we won't tell you what. But that came out of like, I had chatted to a bunch of people about it and kind of put the idea out there with a few people. I approached a few people and said, is this something that you think would work and whatever? He was one of the people that I just asked if it would work. And then he said, yeah, that sounds really good. So that's kind of how that came about. He was actually then interested to get involved. But I guess the thing is having something that you're passionate about more so than something that you think other people will find interesting. I mean, that's probably something that is good, like helpful. If it's something that only you're interested about, then you're probably not going to get any listeners. And maybe that doesn't matter to you. And that's probably a good place to start from, because when you're starting out, like I remember with Tech Reformation, we didn't know if anyone was going to listen to it apart from our wives for the first, 10 episodes. Like, well, our wives listened to one, I think. Everyone's wife listened to the first one, and then it was kind of like dropped off pretty quickly. But anyway, so I think,
how'd you get your wife to listen to one?
It was new. It was a fad, oh, what's this podcasting thing? And now it's just that thing that takes us away from our families once a week for half an hour.
It's true.
But yeah, I think having something that you're interested in and have something to say about is probably the best starting point. And in our part of the world, it helps if that thing is something that can go hand in hand with reform theology, because there's not enough of those podcasts yet.
Wait, you're joking, right?
Yes, I'm joking.
I just wanted to make sure, because it occurred to me all of a sudden that like you could be serious. Then we would have to talk.
Well, since Reform Pubcast kind of just stopped doing regular episodes and Art of Redemption sort of fell off the map, and there's a few that have kind of either on extended hiatus or whatever, it's made some room in the market. But you might want to do something completely different, have an original idea. That might be even better.
Yeah, I think it's not so much that there are enough of them. It's that there are too many of them that aren't good. If there were more more worth listening to, that would be great.
Should we list some specific ones?
So like take the lightest form of flogging. If that one could disappear and be replaced by the Reformed Pubcast coming back, that would be great. I think everybody would like that. So for me, I'm just going to go back around and answer the actual question. For me,
good
I have different reasons for starting each podcast. The first podcast I started was because I wanted to start a podcast. That was the worst reason and the worst podcast. And I'm not going to mention its name or link to it because it is better left in /dev/null. But the second...
How long did it go?
I think we did like 20 episodes, somewhere around there. And we didn't know each other that well. Our topic was too broad. We didn't agree on much. And yeah, it just wasn't good. The second podcast was with Joe. And we decided to start a podcast because we had chemistry. Essentially, like we didn't have a topic, but we thought like we interact well together. We could do a podcast. And we used to go on walks, Joe. Remember that? Trying to figure out what our podcast was going to be about. This is how bad.
Like we'd be like running through the fields and
I just remember like walking along like a busy semi highway with you, like trying to come up with podcast ideas and almost getting run over.
Figuring out what the heck we were going to do. No, those are crazy times. We were crazy kids back then.
For a while, we were going to do it on like each week. We were going to try something new. It was just going to be like the podcast was going to be us trying podcast ideas.
Yeah, because the idea was we didn't have any ideas. So let's just work that out in podcast form. thankfully did not happen.
And then the lightest form of flogging, that was similar. Like Jim and I had a chemistry that we discovered because I was in his small group. And then from there, I think we were both really convinced to do it because he wanted an outlet for his funny, like parody ideas. And I thought it would be good to have a podcast where a Baptist and a Presbyterian talk about and what we talk about, you know, what makes us besides our theology. And that's when we both got excited about it. And that's when it took off.
So have you guys been involved in other podcasts aside from this one? I know that you're talking about starting one.
Yeah, for me, I've never been a part of any other one. This is the only one. I joined this one with Ben asked, and he asked because I tried to write like a tech blog for a little while. I was interested to see if I could be consistent with writing blog posts once a week. And I was writing just on random tech things that I was interested in. I wrote like on keyboard shortcuts one time. That's the only one that sticks out. And he liked the idea and he listens to podcasts a lot. He was like, hey, do you want to start a podcast with me? Kind of like your blog, but also with some theology emphasis in it. I said, sure, why not? Yeah, and I think part of the reason why I've continued doing it and enjoy it is that, you know, it makes me think, like, as we've either come up with topics or we've discussed topics, I've found that I'm able to think a lot deeper about technology and technology-related subjects. And I think, you know, not only technology, but it's just these conversations and these thought, these dialogues have helped me to see, you know, just in the world around me, what I'm living in, how to think deeper and how to have deeper conversations with people. And I've really enjoyed that and enjoyed continuing to be a part of it.
Our sponsor this week is Missionalware, your Reformed theology gift shop. Missionalware prints apparel, drinkware, and accessories with beautiful artwork of historic creeds, quotes, and faces of various reformers. Look to your left. Now look to your right. Chances are that there's an empty wall near you that would look great with a poster that expresses an important Reformed truth. Even if the wall isn't empty, you could take down the picture of your family and replace it with the five solas like a good Calvinist. Grandma will understand. To grab some Reformed posters, t-shirts, mugs, or even just to browse their great designs, check them out at missionalware.com to get your lifestyle on mission to the glory of God. Thanks to Missionalware for sponsoring the Tech Reformation. So what do you guys think are good versus bad reasons for starting a podcast? Because I mentioned the first podcast I started, we had a bad reason, but...
I honestly don't even think that was a bad reason in the sense that... In the sense that what you did it for, part of it is, you know, because you wanted to try podcasting and see what that's like.
Sure.
And starting a podcast and learning the ropes and learning what you did and didn't like about it. I mean, had you not started that podcast, I don't think you would have ever started Helvetic, you know, the best podcast that's ever existed, or been invited onto this one. What? Did I say something?
The second, third, fifth best podcast that's ever existed.
Whoa. Whoa, sir.
Sorry. Fifth is too high.
Yeah.
I mean, way too high.
Looking back, it's hard to regret having done that in the abstract. Looking back, it's hard to regret having done that in the abstract, but I think that it would have had a much better chance if there were other reasons to accompany it. Like having a really interesting topic, or, you know, something to talk about that maybe other people, like, in my mind, having a unique perspective or a unique chemistry, or ideally both, are two really good reasons to start a podcast.
Sure. Oh, I definitely agree with you on that too. I mean, I think that's not just, it isn't just wanting to start a podcast isn't enough to sustain a podcast.
I think one reason that I was thinking about this particular question this morning before we hit record, and I remember before we started Tech Reformation, always thinking, this isn't like a reason to start a podcast or a reason not to start a podcast, but I remember listening to a lot of podcasts on my way to work and thinking frequently that there was a train of thought going on or a conversation going on. And I was like, why isn't someone saying this? Like, you know, when is someone going to say this part? Yeah, but they're missing this thing. Like, and it always seemed like there was obvious things to me that sure, the conversation could survive without it, but it seemed like something that should go in there and that maybe improved it or been a useful point or whatever. Then when we started Tech Reformation, I guess I was hoping that maybe I wouldn't feel that way as much in this situation, because I would feel like, well, I'll have an opportunity to inject that in, you know, in the appropriate place. I'm not saying that all the other podcasts are doing it wrong, and I was thinking I was going to be the savior of their conversation. It's just that I thought, okay. I understand the flow of the conversation. I think this would have been a helpful point there. And so I thought, you know, part of I guess, creating a podcast gives you an opportunity to do that, to influence conversations and inject your perspective or inject something that you think will be helpful. I will say that after doing it now for whatever this is, 150-something episodes?
155.
Right? 155? Yeah. I think there have been times, probably for all of us, where we've been able to do that, and that is great. And you feel like, well, that, you know, this episode went well, or that was, you know, this was a really useful discussion. Hopefully other people find it useful too. At the same time, it doesn't matter how long we've been doing this. When you listen back, there are still things where I'm like, oh man, I should have said this, I shouldn't have said that, and I should have said it this way instead. So I think, you know, that's probably, I think, a fairly common thing for people, is that they go, well, all these other guys who are podcasting, they never say what I would say, so maybe I should start a podcast. And my sort of little friendly warning would just be like, you might find that you listen back to your own podcast and have the same feelings about what you've just recorded after you've recorded it. So it's not always as easy as it seems when you're listening after the fact. The conversations that you have involve other people, and therefore they go in all different directions, and it is what it is, but certainly a worthwhile thing.
That is what the follow-up segment is for.
We all know we need follow-up.
So for those who do want to start, like, there's obviously a technical side to it as well, like getting it up, getting it published, editing, all that stuff. And thankfully, all the technical side, I've never had to touch myself, so I am no expert on that. And so what have you guys done? Like, I guess, David, do you do most of the publishing for the podcast that you're a part of? And if so, what's like the technical side about it?
I actually managed to get Jim to do the editing on that.
You said that.
Which is nice.
Having said that, there is not a lot of editing, because it's usually 20 minutes before the episode starts that somehow remains in the episode.
You would be surprised, actually, on that, how much editing.
I'm kidding,
there. That one is probably
just joking.
More tightly edited than Helvetic ever was.
Yeah. I love your work, Jim. It's good. Keep it up. But that wasn't token at all. That was serious and true.
But I mean, there is a lot that goes into, I mean, there are words that exist in your head that come out your face, and somehow those have to get into the listener's ears. You need equipment. You need some form of software. You need hosting. So that, the stuff that I handle, I guess, would be the equipment and the hosting and the actual posting of the files.
Are you guys on Simplecast for that with vlogging, or are you using something else?
We're using Squarespace right now, but that's up for renewal in March, and I'm actually looking at switching over to Simplecast.
Cool.
Thanks to this podcast.
So, yeah, so people who are thinking of starting a podcast, I would say definitely look at your platform is like one big, like it's a big thing. David was saying hosting, which is true. But I know when we first started, we were literally just hosting audio files online on, I think it was, we were using SoundCloud or something. And then we were like linking it to, we had a WordPress site. So the like SoundCloud files linked to an RSS feed. And then we had a WordPress site where we were publishing all our episodes. And then we had this other website come along called Theology Mix. And they said, hey, we want you to post on our website too, which we did for a while. So we were posting our episodes into two different places. And then we found Simplecast, and Simplecast is a website that is a, has built a platform, that enables you to manage all of your episodes and see statistics and, even manage sponsors and donations and all sorts of things. And the, you know, you're able to have sort of a simple website, in Simplecast that is basically just a feed of all your episodes that looks kind of nice. So that has, I think, been a big, help in just reducing the admin overhead of getting podcasts from recording stage to listening stage. It's been a real big help. So just a hot tip for potential podcasters.
Yeah, Simplecast removes a lot of the burden from when you're finished with the edit to getting that thing published. And I know with Squarespace, I have a number of steps that I have to do that Simplecast just takes care of for me.
Mm. David has this fandangled setup where he looks super cinematic through his webcam, which isn't really a webcam. And then he's got special microphone equipment that he can talk about in a sec. Tank and I are both using a Audio Technica. I think it's a ATR2100B. I think it is. It's a USB
it's AMD
mic,
now, not
which
ATI.
Also has.
That was a joke. Okay. I'm sorry. Somebody out there got that.
It's a USB mic that also has XLR out, and it's, yeah, it's, I mean, duh, of course it's XLR out. What are you going to need XLR in on a microphone for? But it sounds decent. We're both just using little fluffies on the mic head itself, like dead cat things, but not fluffy. Just standard
more
microphone
like a black
covers
clown
to
nose.
Stop.
Yeah, stop our pop so much sound. Better than the pop filter. Thing
we both used to have pop filters actually, and they kind of hide you become Wilson from Home Improvement. They hide your facial expressions, and it's harder for other people to see when you're about to speak as well, which is a downside. And Tank and I both have them on boom arms, which means we can do this.
Oh, you guys don't have a shock mount. You guys need to get shock mounts. Watch, it's not nearly as bad.
I didn't hear anything.
Yeah, that's because. If you look close at my mic setup, there's a little like the mic is suspended between here,
yeah.
Between rubber band type thing.
Is that a Rode shock mount or just a custom branded shock mount?
This was like a $9 Amazon thing.
eBay one. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I've got a couple of Rode mics that have those suspended shock mounts.
Are you rich? Really you have a couple of Rode mics.
Solid. I have a Rode VideoMic Pro.
Dang.
And I have a Rode. Stereo video mic.
You got the stereo.
Whoa,
one.
Make it rain.
Man.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm expecting sunglasses to spin in and land on your face and you say, deal with it.
I have a video production background, so I needed different microphones for making different sorts of videos.
You don't choose the video thug life. The video thug life chooses you.
So the most important thing... I mean, we're talking about tech, and I think we kind of mentioned this, but you need to have something to talk about before you get into tech. And once you are thinking about the tech for your podcast, I guess you should first know that it is possible to do it pretty cheaply. I mean, how much were your guys' mics?
I think these are like 30 or 50, 50, 60.
Yeah, and they sound fine.
Under 100, it was like under $100 for the whole, for the boom arm and the microphone.
Yeah. And you might be tempted to try like other things like a stereo mic or like something put between you and your co-host or whatever. But what ultimately wins out for quality in the end, I mean, you could spend $500 on a stereo mic and set it between you two and it's not going to sound as good as a $10 mic put directly in front of your face hole. Proximity to your face is king with these things. And as long as you have the volume set right, the microphone close to your face, and something to keep the pops away, you're gonna be ahead of most people who are trying to start podcasts and don't know anything about what they're doing.
Yeah. I must admit, I started on a Zoom H1N, which is like the small version of the H3. So it's like really thin, on a little Manfrotto tripod on my desk that was like 20 centimeters away from my face. And then it just sounded like I was, you know, in the back of a car or something, like trying to talk to someone in the front seat, like I was too far away. Then I went to a Blue Snowball, which I think is like the standard, I want to start a podcast mic. And people get these little white things that look like a snowball because they think they look cute. I just went with it because it was cheapish. And it was, I couldn't be bothered finding like a vocal mic and getting, you know, I thought that it would be more expensive to get a proper vocal mic. Turns out this Audio Technica is cheaper than my Blue Snowball, which I no longer use. So if anyone wants a Blue Snowball to start a podcast.
half the Skype room raises their hands.
I might actually, I'm actually thinking of hanging on to it because I want to start another podcast one day that I have a specific idea for, but
you should,
I don't want to
keep it and send me your Rode stereo mic.
I don't want to tell you all.
I'll take that. Yeah. I mean,
do you want the boom as well? Stick it on the boom.
The reason that you're trying to get the microphone as close to your face as you can is because you're trying to cut out echo essentially. If your microphone is closer to the wall than it is to your face, you're going to be getting more echo than you are your microphone or, you know, your voice, because sound gets louder as you get closer to it at a very fast rate. Like, it's not as though if you are, you know, if you're 6 inches away, it's say 80 decibels and you're 3 inches away. Now it's double that, it's 160. It's more like it's quadruple that.
Yeah.
And the closer you get, the better off you are.
And if you're using any kind of mixing device, it just lets you have the gain lower, which means less background noise and general badness that you have to try and then cut out in editing.
And that, I guess, gets into the gear that I use. When I first started, I had just a $50 mixer and a $10 mic. Pyle makes a couple of microphones that are knockoffs of Shure microphones. And it's good if you
can, you mean Shure?
It's good. Sure. It's good if you can use a microphone that is designed for live performance, unless you have a room that has almost no echo. Because the live performance mics are designed to have a very narrow pickup pattern. So they're only picking up what's directly in front of them. Whereas if you go with like a studio condenser microphone, you may find that that's kind of picking up all around, which is really handy in a studio and it gets you a better audio quality overall. But if you're bouncing your voice off the walls in your room, that's going to cause you all kinds of problems.
Can I do a quick warning about rookie mistake as well? Don't have your headphone volume any louder than you have to have it to be able to hear the other person speaking. Because one of the single most annoying things in editing is having two different audio tracks and one of them actually has
the other audio
both
track.
People because you're getting spill from the other person's headphones.
Apparently, so that's a problem for me. Better ones today.
just to try and save people some headaches, I would say turn your headphone volume down as low as you can without being able to needing to say, huh, what did you say all the time?
Awesome. Yeah, I'm doing that now. So this will be easy to mix.
This last 5 minutes will be really easy.
Next few minutes.
Yeah, the other thing that you can do with that is just have closed back headphones. If you look up, there's a difference between open back, which tend to have a wider soundstage. They tend to sound more like you're like if you're listening to a live performance, it tends to sound like it's really right in front of you. Whereas closed headphones tend to feel a little bit more closed in, but they're way better for recording because they don't leak nearly as much audio. Or you could use earbuds too.
Well, are there any final things that need to be talked about? Is editing something that is a big deal, or is it turned out as pretty simple as far as needed items?
Editing is like how long is a piece of string? Like you can barely edit anything and just put two tracks in a thing and export it as a mono file if you wanted to. But if you're wanting to pan things and cut out hums and coughs and things like that, then there's a little bit more to it and it takes a bit longer. It can take quite a long time. And if you're adding in other assets like music and stuff like that, then it takes a little while to get the fades right and, you know, volume and compression and stuff like that. But that's probably you could do a whole podcast on how to do decent podcast compression and whatnot. Like there's a bit of you need to know something about audio, like production to kind of have really good success with that. But essentially you're trying to get your voices as loud as possible without clipping and the background noise as low as possible so that it's not disrupting. So that's kind of, you know, there's a bunch of processes involved in that if you want to go to that sort of extent, which I think we have always tried to do as much as we can in the sort of time constraints we've got. But that's not prohibitive. Like I said, you could put together a podcast with very little editing and depending on how confident you are with what you're saying and all that kind of thing. Of course, people may not listen to it if it's too unedited, but you know, it's not, I think you don't have to have $50,000 recording studio to be able to edit a podcast. There's some pretty, even Audacity and some free stuff around there, Reaper and things like that are, or cheap solutions at least, will allow you to do, or even GarageBand will let you do GarageBand for our American friends, will allow you to edit audio files. So there's a range of options and it really is how much time have you got to spend on it, I think.
Yeah, I use Adobe Audition and it has some presets that are great for getting started specifically for podcast recording. Although I usually find that they're kind of built around you're in a sound stage, like a sound studio with no echo. So I have to tweak it a little bit to remove some echo. The other problem that I have constantly that editing usually has to take care of is that both for this podcast, Joe and I frequently record in the same room. And then for the lightest form of flogging, Jim and I record in the same room. And I'm always trying to get the microphones so that they're not picking each other up by putting distance between us. And then in post, trying to adjust volume levels so that we're not, you know, I'm not accidentally boosting his microphone, picking me up.
Mm-hmm. Well, cool. Well, for anybody who wants to start a podcast and needs any help, I'm sure that we'd be happy to answer any questions in the Slack or love to hear your ideas or whatever you come up with. So I suppose that's all.
Yeah. And if you would like to ask some questions, tell us about a podcast that you're thinking about starting, you can join us on our Slack at slack.techreformation.com.
There's a website as well where we've got all of our episodes hosted at techreformation.com.
This has been the Tech Reformation. Thanks for listening. And we will podcast again next week. I ain't looking back. No, no.